F4. Number 6B.
Now, John Dolly has shown us in his Oxford report, when he did present those four Gospels, he showed that the Gospel of John is laid out in those four stages of the candlestick, so that the whole Gospel will first show the Word as life and soul, the top two arms. Then in the second part, the next one, truth and spirit. Then in the third part, love and mind. And then in the fourth part, just principle. You may ask me now, well, I explained it a little bit different before, because I went out from life and soul, and not soul and life. And I said truth and spirit, and not spirit and truth. And I said love and mind. Gosh, I'm always on the wrong side sitting for you. But you understand. Yes. This is because of the following. Because it is a candlestick and has always equal arms, you cannot say that one or the other has preponderance. So you cannot say it can only be soul and life, but it can also be life and soul, because they have the same equal value. They are bound together at the candlestick. When do we use the one, when the other? See, when we go out from mind, spirit, soul, which is defining really the nature of God, then we have the first top arms as, you read this, as soul and life. You first come to soul and life. That's how we arrive at the candlestick. So if we work up to the candlestick from the preceding orders, we come next to spirit and truth, and then afterwards to God, mind and love. So that the first ones are always soul, spirit, mind, next to the candlestick. This is when we approach the understanding of the science order. Then mind, spirit, soul, or soul, spirit, mind, have preponderance. This is what one calls the objective approach to the candlestick. If we go out from understanding, what does it mean? But once we have understood the candlestick and has understood the operation of the divine principle, then the science order becomes divinely subjective. Divinely subjective. It means that the thinking goes out from principle and not up to principle. So therefore, at that point, you go out from the divinely subjective standpoint and you begin to see really first life and soul. Then, because principle expressing itself always as life, truth and love. It does not express itself as mind, spirit, soul. That's his nature. The nature of principle is mind, spirit, soul. But the essence of that principle is that it says, I am here, principle is here, in order to operate so that always life is brought out, that always truth is brought out, that always love is brought out. That's my inner nature of principle. All right, I rest on the nature of mind, spirit, soul, but the purpose of the operation of principle is not to bring out mind, spirit, soul, but the purpose and the aim and the meaning of that principle is to manifest itself as life, truth, and love. So if we have established a subjective standpoint from God, from the infinite one, from the one principle comes the infinite idea, we have to go out from the subjective standpoint. And so from the subjective standpoint, we will see that in the Gospel very clearly, you have really first life and soul. Huh? Then afterwards, truth and spirit. And then love as mind. Huh? Yeah, still right. Huh? Standing on principle. Sorry that I'm so slow. Yeah. Actually, I should be a bit quicker. Yeah. So that's the reason why in the course of the text interpretation, we always see first a subjective standpoint be accentuated and not the objective standpoint. Okay, now, this is the candlestick order. If we go further to page 5, you see that in figure 3, we have the law of interdependence in science. We have seen in absolute Christian science, which is above the dotted line, you have truth and love. Truth and love express, and I come back then to it, express science in absolute Christian science. Having a relationship, that's why you have those vertical lines, which have a relationship to those four stages in Christian science as the candlestick. Beneath the dotted line, you can see you have the signs of the candlestick. Is that clear? Yes. So that what John wants to show is that if you have in the first part of life and soul, you have always shown that first from the standpoint of truth in absolute Christian science, and then afterwards from the standpoint of love in absolute Christian science. Then when we come to the second part of truth and spirit, it is always first shown in the first part, in the first line, from the standpoint of truth, then afterwards from the standpoint of love. And so with love and mind, or mind and love, you have first a whole description of how that works from the standpoint of truth, and what happens when you look at it from the absolute standpoint of love. And so in the fourth part of principle, again, there is a description of what happens from the standpoint of truth and then from the standpoint of love. In order to bring that out in terminology a bit clearer so that we understand each other for a whole week, we must make somehow a common terminology among us and agree on some kind of a terminology which is shorter than what I have said here. So, in the future, very often, instead of speaking of life and soul, I say first part. If the subject goes on to truth and spirit, I say it's the second part. If we go further than in the text and come to love and mind, I say this is the third part. And if we go further and come to principle as such, I say in the fourth part. Do we understand each other? Instead of constantly saying life and soul and truth and spirit, I just say in the first part. Very often I will say also the synonymous term, but if I don't, I say part, and then you know what I mean. Then we make another agreement between us. Instead of always saying from the standpoint of truth in absolute Christian science, I just say capital A. And if we talk then about from the standpoint of love, from the absolute Christian science, I say B. And that is what you have here on page 5, on the lower part. That is the basic structure of John's Gospel, you can see. So first part means life and soul. So if I say first part, you know it's life and soul. if I say A from the standpoint of truth. If I say B, you know it's from the standpoint of love. And so with the second part, with truth and spirit, I say just as we have seen in the second part B, then you know it is the second part, it is the truth and spirit from the standpoint of love. Instead of repeating always this. So we have quite a simple scheme mentally in our mind, so that we find our standpoint or our place value at once. So that in the future I can say, well, we'll see in the third part A, then you know it is the third part is love and mind from the standpoint of truth. Okay, little by little we get into the rhythm of it and we feel it's quite easy and quite natural. That is what I wanted to show here on page 5 on the lower part. And it is up to this point, really, that John Dooley gave us the structure. Only up to this point. What we will do afterwards, because I will show you that in every part and in every A and B, we have quite a differentiated structure that is shown, mostly even under an A, a whole matrix. That is all new, that is not in the books that you have read. I hope you have studied John Dooley's Oxford report that I have asked in the invitation. It's a terrific book. Even if you haven't read it, go home and read it. It's a terrific book, though he doesn't show the final structure as we see it today and which we talk it this week. But I always feel that the Oxford Summer School for 1949 is John Dooley's highest teaching, his absolutely highest teaching, unequaled. So from here on, we begin then to see that we can fill in quite a lot of finer structure so that we will find that we get really practically every incident in John's Gospel has its place value within the structure. That it has a definite place value within categories and categories. Terrific. So that it's like a filigrane work that he is showing here, you know, very dainty, but everything is absolutely ordered and classified and systematized and structured. Now, we have shown, or we have discussed together, the candlestick order. We have not yet discussed what means truth and love from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science. And therefore I have to go on and first to explain to you that standpoint. What is meant by that standpoint? Now, if you look at the model of being on page 4 again, perhaps, we see that if we take the level of absolute Christian Science, that we always have a combination that have to do either with life, truth and love, or truth, life and love, life and love, truth and love. You see, mind, spirit, soul are not accentuated here. Naturally, they are embedded in it, but they have no accentuation. So the accent always lies on the divine principle that expresses itself as life, truth, and love. In the word we have seen, it's life, truth, and love. I don't have to explain that in detail, but here and there, in the text, when we come in John to the text of life, truth, and love, which is a very great tone, we must see what does it mean. In the word, naturally, it means this, that we are not just talking constantly, well, it's life, truth, and love, or it's truth, life, and love. This is words, this is terminology, this is not spiritual consciousness. We must be aware what these terms mean. And so I try only quickly to give the tone of it. When we have life, truth, and love, And actually, this is a big point, because in John, this is just called the Father. He calls the Father the Word. I go to the Father, I come from the Father, I come from the Word, I go to the Word, I come from that Father. And Father is a term, a biblical term, for our scientific terminology, which is life, truth, and love. Which means that the accent is on life, so actually it means life, truth, and love. Does it mean life, truth, and love? It means life, truth, and love. The creative fatherhood sense is expressed through life. Really, the creative impulsion is meant through with life. It is meant that this is the impulse to bring forth, to create. It is the well of life. It's the spontaneity of life. It is the mutation of life. It is the success of life. It is that drive of life, that well of life that flows and flows and nothing can go against it. So we get the sense that being is of the nature of the fatherhood of life, namely of life, impelling life, which is within itself truth, which is the truth about creation, about this impulsion of life. That's the truth about it. It's not erroneous. There is nothing erroneous in that well of life. No erroneous water flows out of that well, out of that source of life. And within it is already the fulfillment of that creative ability. So that we know right from the beginning when life says, I impel something, that impelling of something is the truth about something. It has no error in it, no mistake in it, and has already everything in it, in that impelling force that drives everything towards completion, towards perfection, towards fulfillment, towards consummation. So that it never stops just with saying, I'm life, and I'm the impulsion of life. It also says, at the same time, I am the very truth, and I am the very fulfillment of it. You can't separate the truth and love from the impulsion of life. Then you perhaps get a tone of life, truth, and love. Very different it is when we come to the Christ, where we have truth, life, love, where the truth is accentuated, because Christ is the one truth, the ideal truth. And you can say, now, what is that ideal truth? And you can say, well, that what the Father has shown, namely the word of life, truth, and love, that's the ideal Father. So I go out from that ideal Father and say, this ideal Father has a Christ. That's the truth about everything. And at the moment I say it's the truth about everything, I say it's the truth about every individualized aspect. That's life. Life individualizes. So it's the truth about every individualized aspect of truth. So again, you have that one truth individualized as infinite truth. And those individualized truths are at the point of consummation, of fulfillment, love. They are adapted to the situation. They are, so to say, tailor-made for the situation, exactly to the situation, so that they fulfill what they have to fulfill, and that's the office of love. So the Christ is really that where we feel there is a terrific truth that translates itself to an individual situation, life, so and fulfills within the individual situation what needs to be fulfilled? Love. Yes? And that is, you see, these are things that first one perhaps thinks out with the brain. Says, what does it mean, truth and life and love? And one begins perhaps to think with the brain and to get straightened out and to get the right concept of it. But you will feel that as you do that over some months and so on, and entertain that so as a background music all through the day. It's very easy. You drive your car, you do something, you play with something or so. You can have that background music entertained and say, well, where do I live? I live in the world of life, truth, and love. I live in that realm of being where being constantly says, I'm the one being and I express myself constantly. You can't help it. You can't resist it. I express myself constantly, and that's the truth about you, and that has within itself the fulfillment, life, truth, and love. And that entertains then afterwards within you the Christ. And something within you just hums and hums and hums. It's a melody that you constantly carry around with you, which says, and you know, this is the Christ to every situation. Wherever you go, whatever you do, that's the Christ to the situation, because it's the truth about it. And so it's the truth individualized in every situation. You can go to any situation, you do what you want, it's individualized, that truth is individualized, so that it is adapted love, adapted, measured to your, tailor-made, huh? Just to your, fitted, nicely fitted, huh? That's love. So that it's really the answer to a situation. Just entertain those three again as a hum, as a music, as a melody that just goes along with you. As you go along on a walk, as you stand in line at the shop and so on, what shall you do standing in a line? Looking what the next one is wearing, or what is the hat of the... Why not having a music in your ear? Just a wonderful music which says you are in the midst of that one being. And in the midst of that one being is nothing going on but life, truth, and love. And that expresses itself as truth, life, and love. How long? How long? Eternally. You come to Christianity, to life and love. You say, this is the law of eternalization. That is a law that we don't have to bring into operation. That's a law of life that is constantly going on and constantly going on. You see, life has another place value than in the world. Here it is, that sense that goes on and on. It provides and it sustains and it maintains and conserves and preserves. And love says to that, life says, and I protect it, I welcome it, I hug it, I embrace it, I keep it warm, I let it unfold within my womb, I embosom it, it's wonderful, I see the wonder of it, the promise of it, I welcome it. Can you hear that? That's going on while you stand in the line, huh? It's right there. Yeah. Then finally you come to the science, order to truth and love, where you see, yes, is that always going on? This is then constantly a creative impulsion going on that has to bring out something. And you begin to feel, no, being is already. It doesn't have to have a creative impulsion. Being is being. So actually we don't need life. We don't need the impulsion of life. Everything is already at the point of truth and love. It's already a truth that existed since time immemorial, that has not to be projected into being in life, truth and love, but that has existed since time immemorial as a fact, as an absolute truth, as an absolute fact that was always factual, so that man, at that point you can see that man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. It's not that you have to heal man of sin, sickness, and death. At that point, the factuality of truth says man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. And so you have the pre-established harmony, love as fulfillment. The facts are already fulfilled. 2 and 2 equal 4 is a fact that has always existed and is fulfilled. You don't have to create it. There is no need for the impulsion of life to create it. And that's the tone that we get here constantly in every part when we come to A, it's always that truth, that ideal truth, that ideal truth that is the science of everything, the truth of everything, and you come, you're then next to B, from the standpoint of love, where you see everything is already at the point of fulfillment, that nothing has to be fulfilled, it's always at the point of fulfillment. That's truth and love. We will see then, and that's then the interesting thing, which we only can do right at the end of John, if we have time, that we say, how does truth in every one of those parts express itself? It's still the one truth, but we'll see that it has different shades. Actually, it must have different shades because it's always in a different, on a different side of the calculus. And so it is with B, with love, that love always takes on a little bit a different shade, tonality, a different tone of what love is, in order to bring out the first, second, third, and fourth part. It's a wonder what John has seen here. You will see that. It's a great wonder. Now, therefore, to resume again, what is truth and love? When, no. 2 minutes? Okay, she has to. Okay. What is truth? Huh? John will show here that truth is really showing the ideal truth, the ideal Christ. Today it would be the ideal Christ science. That the ideal of God today as truth is the Christ science. But what about love? And I'm very hot on that capital term, love. Because that love has nothing to do with the lovey-dovey. Nothing at all. It has nothing to do with the human loving, with the loving each other, with the loving-dovey sense, be kind to each other, be smiling, to keep smiling to each other, and so on. Love is a fact in being. It has nothing to do with one person or another person, one person loving the other person, and so on, or hating them, which is usually the case. Now, it has to do with a fact in being, not with a fact in man. It has to do with a fact in being. What is that fact? Mrs. Eddy would bring that out, perhaps in the following few statements that I want to quote. She says, what is love? Love is wedded to its own spiritual idea. You see in it no people. Love is a fact in being that says that the perfection of being is always wedded, is always one with the spiritual idea. It's never separated. There are not two realities. A love that loves something or somebody. It's not two. It's one. That love is that reality in being that cannot be without its manifestation, he says. The moment we have a feeling that love is unexpressed, then we don't have a sense of love. Love means that it is expressed, that it is manifested, that it cannot help to have an expression, that it cannot help to be, as he says, divine love cannot be deprived of its object or manifestation. Think of it, what that means. Think of that consciousness which we could entertain if we would have the right sense of love. That we would go into the world and day in and day out and say, love is always expressed. Its halo always rests on its object. I don't have to put the halo on an object or on a friend or on somebody. This is all lovey-dovey stuff. Get rid of that stuff. It has nothing to do with being, with the capital B. Being is of the nature of love that says, I'm never without my manifestation. I'm always one with my manifestation. Then you got the term here of love, which we'll find here. Okay, tomorrow we start with John.